Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Imprint Companion. This is a podcast about Australia's beautiful boutique Blu-ray label, Imprint Films, and their incredible collection of collection and curation of beautiful cinema for disc heads like me, Blake Howard, and my partner in crime, the clerk at the Last Video Store. It's the legendary Alexi Toliopoulos. Lex, it's so good to see you in your home video library and not just fighting the good fight for physical media over at Batuta and elsewhere. How are you, my friend?
Mate, I am so good. And I've always said you're a dischead. I've always said you're a massive dischead, but I'm glad you could put it into such terminology. I'm good, Blake. How are you, my dear friends?
I'm very good. It has been a quiet beginning to March with lots of exciting projects building up. One project concluding with the midnight run through on One Heat Media Productions, mm-hmm. which I'm really proud of. We had the lovely George Gallo, the writer of that show, on. It was a beautiful experience with myself and Jen Johans. And now just winding up, there's some amazing episodes. Miami Vice.
I particularly love the Adam Pally episode of that podcast.
He's sensational. Pally was tip top. But Miami Vice fans from 2006, you would know the character Jose Hierro and you would know the actor John Ortiz. He's joined Katie and I on an episode of Miami Nice and promised to come back, Lex. It's a beautiful, I can't wait. All around the time that you're going to be hearing this, you're going to be hearing those great things. So I'm having a good time and physical media is kicking our ass right now. And Imprint is just like, we've already got the next month's batch. We've got a huge, fantastic outlook of stuff. It's so awesome to be back to talk discs with you. And this was a really kind of cool, eclectic surprise bundle, some real bangers in this list. And what we're talking about is the February bundle pack. So we've had a little bit of time to motor through it. We're going to get to March as soon as we can. And we've got two episodes coming up for you. This is the first. We're going to cover three of the great discs in this bundle in this one. And what are we going to kick off with, Lex?
Well, I say, why don't we kick off with probably what is the biggest classic in this set from one of the great directors, Ingmar Bergman, starring his close collaborator, Liv Ullmann. It is Face to Face. Successful psychiatrist who suffers from profound depression and mental illness finds herself teetering on the brink of a nervous breakdown, haunted by disturbing images and emotions from her past. Blake, you've had a chance to catch up with this one. What were your immediate thoughts on this film from Ingmar Bergman? Are you a Bergman head? Have you explored his filmography, or is this a first foray for you?
No, I'm a Bergman head too. I've got the gigantic, glorious Criterion collection, of which this film does not feature. Mm-hmm. So it was even more essential for me as a completist to be like, oh my God, thank God, finally there's one that is not in a 40-disc collection. He's a legend. This movie stars the incredible Liv Ullmann. And if you don't know, it was also hugely recognized by the Academy at the time. It came out in 1976. It was nominated for Best Director at the time. It was nominated for Best Actress by Liv Ullmann. And it was a huge film at the time. I'd never seen it. And the best way that I could describe it is it's like in the strangest way, and I know this might sound completely batshit, so please just go with me on this. But it's almost like,
if it's batshit, I'm going to scream out of here.
It's almost like Bergman has taken a look at Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol and taken that template of someone who is, you know, living their life as in Scrooge, and, you know, Liv Ullmann's character is Dr. Jenny Isaacson, and seeing her at this nexus of her life and obviously taking a much more hard edge. She's, you know, a psychotherapist. She's meant to have her stuff together. She's working on building a new home with her husband. There's lots of plans in place, and she's in this sort of zone where she has to go back to her past and stay with her grandparents and, you know, be around old friends and things like that. And it's her trying to have experience, have a life, and do these things. And she, you know, and sort of trigger warning, attempts suicide. And when she does that, it triggers these like series of stasises, these long, weird, distended dreams where she experiences a whole bunch of potential sliding doors moments in her life. And so it's kind of weird and high concept in that regard. But one thing that is anchored by it is just this absolutely sensational, like really implacable and ambivalent performance from Liv Ullmann. Her face, Lex, is just, you just lose yourself in it because you're like, I never quite know what she's thinking. Every line she says, it's almost like in a direct contrast with her body language and what she's doing here. And it's all this like level of unpredictability. And it's so, you know, in such a staged movie with such a high concept with lots of like very deliberate lines and things like that, she's just bringing this extra dimension to it. So it was a really fascinating and like, and interesting watch, and just a really terrific movie. It feels more contemporary because a lot of the Bergman stuff you're watching, they're extremely high art. It's much more of a conventional movie in that regard. But it was kind of like a master sort of dabbling in his most possibly commercial mode that he could, like from an international perspective. And yep. I was really into it. There are terrific performances. There's that sort of lovely manipulation of your time in the movie. Sometimes it's moving at a clip and things are flying by. Other times you're really allowed to just gestate in these scenes. And I had a really good time. And for me, if you have never seen it, never heard of it, or if you had seen it a million years ago, knowing some of the physical media heads that listen to this show, like if you had remembered this movie or was part of that memory, and if you've never been able to get your hands on it, man alive, it's a worthwhile revisit. Very interesting, and definitely a good one for the completists out there. So yeah, I had a really good time with this one. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to always like be emphatic about these sorts of things, but like with a master, it's like any part of their resume is really interesting, and I think that it would have been kind of criminal to not eventually have this on some gorgeous Blu-ray that you could really, you know, you could really get sink your teeth into if you like. So no, I had a really good time with it, and I know you haven't had a chance to check it out, but just for you, knowing how much you love just like performers, especially great strong female performers, she has such a unique stylistic quality to the way that she practices her like art and registers her the emotions or lack of, or manipulates you while the script, you know, she's saying one thing and she's feeling another. I think the complexity of her whole being is just on show here. And it's no wonder she was nominated for big awards internationally and recognized, because it's a pretty spellbinding performance. It really feels like, it really feels almost like Amy Adams has been reaching to be Liv Ullmann for her entire career. I was watching this and I was like, they look so much alike. They feel like, and I think that Amy Adams has probably looked at Liv Ullmann a million times and been like, I wish I could have what she's having at some point, but I don't know if she's still reaching. Maybe the closest she ever got was like The Master. That was my experience with this one. It was really a great watch, and I was like transfixed by the whole thing. So yeah, couldn't recommend higher. It's just like a very interesting, weird and weird in a good way movie.
I can't wait to dive in. Bergman is someone that I've seen, you know, a lot of the top headliners.
Yes.
But I've not explored deep, even though I do have that big box set as well from Criterion. Maybe this will be my way to jump back in and then dive further into the Bergman oeuvre. The next film that we've got, Blake, why don't you give us a bit of that blurb for a film starring another one of my favorite actors, my favorite actresses, Greta Scacchi. It is A Man in Love.
A movie star, and a young actress. A man in love.
Cut!
You were wonderful.
I'm doing my trailer. I'm trying to do a little work here, all right? Who do you think I am?
Who do you think you are?
While filming a biopic of an Italian author, Cesar Pavese, in Rome, married American actor Steve Elliott, played by Peter Coyote, falls in love with his young European co-star, Jane, played by the lovely Miss Scarkey, who is portraying his on-screen flame. As their passion develops, each begins to lose their footing in a romantic crossroad between fiction and reality. Lex, talk to me about this 1987 steamy movie about ego and love and men and women.
Steamy is such a good way to put it. This is probably the pick of the batch for me as well, Blake. I'd say this. I loved this movie. Greta Scucchi is one of my very favorite actors. Like, I just think that she is an incredible screen presence, a great emoter, and great at playing things that one should be hiding and the things that one should be holding, like, closer to the chest, if you will, like all of that. I think she's such a fantastic actor, and this is a truly sexy movie. This is like truly sexy without being quite like erotic. Like, it's not an erotic film, but it's sexy in the way that it captures relationships and changing dynamics and building of a relationship. It is directed by filmmaker Diane Kuris, who was an actress who then became a filmmaker. It's the first film I've seen by her, and it definitely made me want to continue exploring their filmography. What I will say is the way that emotion progresses and the way that emotion changes and builds throughout the film, I think is, the way that I'll put it is, like, it's quite nice. Like, it's got a really a nice emotional arc, this film. And that idea of an on-set affair is so intriguing. Like, it's just, you know, it's that Hollywood thing that everyone hears, like, oh, did you hear these two actors hooked up on this film? It's like such an intriguing and juicy premise to explore.
It's a cool water cooler talk. Like, it's always like, oh, did you know that in this movie that we're having real sex? And you don't really ever know. Like, you don't know, but it's like that whole thing of like, oh, they were really in love, or, you know, even as early
they left their partners for each other and then they went back to it. You just hear these rumors, and it's a juicy, juicy setting for a film, especially for a filmmaker who used to be an actor. Like, I think that is that great little insight that you're going to get added to that kind of feeling. And I think the way that explores the ideas of this on-set affair, I think it explores them quite thoughtfully. And that's what I found really interesting. Like, there's a lot to, like, stick your teeth into with this, because it explores them thoughtfully in both a very sincere way and, like, a poetically hot way as well. Like, the poetics in this, they're sexy, they're hot. And the thing that I probably take away most from this movie, or the thing that made me enjoy the experience of watching it most, is everybody is dressed so nicely. I think the costumes for this movie
are
so understated yet stylish. Like, they're not hyperextending into into a surrealist space or even an exaggerated space. Everyone is just dressed so nicely in this, like, 90s, 80s era clothing that is so nicely styled without ever veering into that exaggerated space. And it's the kind of thing that, like, while you're watching it, I'm opening up my cloth browsers, like, looking for new outfits and inspirations. Like, oh, maybe I should buy a jumper like this. And I would say an extension to that, I think the aesthetic all round is fantastic for this movie. You get these beautiful vistas of Italy. It's, like, nice and intimate. I really, really love this film. I'm so glad I got to watch it this way.
Yeah, Diane Kuris is, you nailed my favorite experience, like, of this film, which is she completely buys into the fantasy of falling in love on a movie set, because it's like there's a fantasy of new love and there's a fantasy of, like, the artifice of movie making and the beauty of, like, being made up and having these outfits and nostalgia and throwback, and then there's all this beauty in the Italian countryside, but then it's also like the true isolation of the reality of like, we're living a double life. We're doing this thing. His family's coming in. It's like, are my dreams being derailed for this fantasy? Is this fantasy worth it? Like, is it going to sustain? And I think it has one of the coolest, like, full circle arcs for a character in that way. And so I really like, I got amongst this too. I had such a great time watching it. And it was that whole bit of like, it just nails the escapism of being in love for the first time and what it must feel like if you're falling in love in like this kind of setting. And I think if anyone's like had a steamy work romance that maybe didn't work or something like that, you can kind of get some of these sensations and feelings too. And then you come crashing back to reality of like, oh shit, like, what am I doing here? What is this all about? And I think that I think the way that Curious just sort of like shifts the focus of the movie more towards Greta Scarkey's character towards the end, I was just like, that was such an amazing decision for me as I was watching it. I was like, yeah, this is, it is working a treat to see Jane like wrestle this movie away from the fantasy. And so, yeah, I think this is a ripper. Like I too haven't seen anything from Dying Curious before, but I was like, this is great. I had a great time. And as you said, it's just, you know, Italy, France, gorgeous, you know, Tuscan villas. You know, it's just like, it's really beautiful. And, you know, a sneaky Jamie Lee Curtis pops up in there. Some other cool, like, that guys are in there.
Great,
like,
casting with her. Great cast, Peter Coyote's great in this. Oh, God, there was someone else who really excited me that they were in this movie. Claudia Cardinale.
Yes.
Plays Greta Scucky's mother in this. And I think that is great casting. Peter Rygart. I love Peter Rygart.
Peter Rygart's one of your guys.
Really
for sure.
Fun movie. I love Peter Rygart. And I'm going to say a huge shout out to a friend of ours, Alexandra Hella Nicholas, has provided an audio commentary for this film, which for me is reason enough to revisit it one more time. But that's A Man in Love. I think it's really worth your time, this film. A great film if you've been fantasizing about having an affair. It shall assuage all of those feelings, and you can live your normal life and live vicariously for the film instead.
Well, perfect segue, because if you are not scared to have an affair, you may also want to watch the film Io Non Ho Paura, which is by Gabriel Salvatore's I'm Not Scared. Lex, would you like to read the blurb from I'm Not Scared?
Due bestie notturne, amanti del buio, voi che non dormite se non al mattino. Vegliate sul sonno di questo bambino.
Ten-year-old Mikel's days in a remote southern Italian village are filled with the familiar routines of childhood. But a chance discovery leads to a shocking revelation. Now, suddenly beyond the point of no return, Mikel digs further to find that even his own parents may be involved in a monstrous crime. That blurb leaves a lot out there on the field for the viewer to discover. Perhaps we should dance around things a little bit when it comes to plot. But maybe to kick things off, Blake, to kick off our discussion, the thing that I loved most about this film is a thing that I often appreciate about films that do this thing successfully, is that this film captures everything in quite a sophisticated way from a child's point of view.
Yes.
It is able to capture the world through a child's perspective in a way that feels quite realistic, where you glean some information, perhaps sometimes incorrect information. And I think to have a crime film from that perspective, I thought was just fascinating. And especially during this fervent time of Italian history that has, you know, it's not unfamiliar to film lovers, the years of lead, which was like years in the 1960s and 70s that were run by the mafia. And I think that this was a really interesting way to explore those ideas.
Yeah. There's another movie that we've talked about, which is City of God, which is one of the ultimate crime films set from the eyes of children, but children who are being entangled and engulfed and having their childhood stolen by crime. This was from a perspective of innocence, and like, it's a provincial boy just living his life, making up games, having free rein to, you know, travel the countryside and do what he wants to do with his friends, and trying to chart a moral path in sometimes, like, you know, with being latchkey kids, you know, being drastically under-supervised. And a crime occurs, and he discovers that the crime has occurred, and then starts trying to piece this thing together. And it's not like a detective investigating, it's just kind of like trying to gain an understanding. Like, it's like, firstly,
trying to understand what is going on instead of like get to an answer.
That's exactly what it is. And I think just talking to you is searching for that answer is where I was looking for, is like, it's just searching for an answer, but not for a motive, not for a villain, not for that, those sorts of things, just to sort of understand that there is a massive gap between childhood and being an adult, or having an adult perception. And it's like that loss of innocence is what this movie is about. And so, yeah, I had an amazing time watching this, because you just love hearing gleaned details through doors and muffled in family arguments and conversations that stop, that you kind of half hear as you're entering a room and stop because a child enters. And it's a really fascinating thing, and sort of talks about the morality of the, you know, what is ultimately a bunch of poor people living in provincial Italy, you know, and not very educated, so potentially being manipulated by people as well. So it's a really morally interesting movie, but God, I love this. And it doesn't relinquish the perspective. It is so committed to that being the vision of the movie. I love that it didn't give you easy answers. And I also love that the whole crescendo of the movie, which we obviously won't spoil, but I'd never heard of this movie. And this might be my pick of the batch, because I'm such a crime head anyway. And I love these kinds of movies. And I just was so surprised and moved and kind of delighted and heartbroken by this movie. I thoroughly enjoyed I'm Not Scared.
Yeah, I'm pretty close there with you, Blake. I really like this film. The perspective is unique. It's interesting. It looks wonderful.
Looks
great. For the most part. I think this Blu-ray has a few moments where it doesn't quite live up to the actual visuals of it.
Yes.
But also, you'll never get a better looking version of this film. Like, this is the best we'll ever get. So I'm glad that I got to discover it this way. So thank you to Imprint for making I'm Not Scared on Blu-ray. Good film. And I like seeing that we get every now and then these more recent films. Like when I say recent, this film came out like 21
years ago. Yeah, it's 2003. It's a 2003 movie, but it's still pretty recent and is pretty jammed. It's got, you know, Gabriel Tavatores does an archival interview for this. He also does the audio commentary. And then there's a brand new Fields of Gold interview with Niccolo Ammaniti, who's the writer, that was actually new for this release. So a bunch of other stuff on there if it piques your interest for those guys and hearing about the whole motivations. And that's one I want to watch. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet with Nicholas Ammaniti, because I want to hear from the writer's perspective how much of that translated from the page to the screen, because I think it's so important. And I'm always fascinated when that translates, like when a director looks at a POV that is so anchored to the text and is like, yeah, we're committing to that. That's the vision. So really fascinating. Well, look, that's half basically of the February bundle. Some real bangers in there. Uninteresting. Lots of stuff. I think you've got essentially the picks of the batch, and that's not to say that there's not some good stuff coming up, but the picks of the batch, A Man in Love and I'm Not Scared in there, a Bergman as well. Lex, that's fantastic. Let's quickly wrap up, because we do have another episode we're going to follow on this pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But before we run off, tell the folks who listened to the Imprint Companion a little bit about the last video store. We teased it in a previous episode. So if they're hanging around here and this is where they've heard you for the first time, let's talk about the last video store.
The Last Video Store is my new podcast. It's a collaboration between me and the Batuta Advocate. It is basically a chat show about the films that people love. Every week I'm joined by an interesting guest who will come on into the video store, a virtual bastion of every single movie ever, and they'll pick out a rental combo of some of their favorite movies, their favorite new release film, any film from the last 5 years, two weeklies, that's their favorite films ever, and then I'll give them a bespoke, customized recommendation based on their taste, a staff pick from my staff picks shelf, and it's been really great. We've had some really interesting people on. Angela White, who's one of the biggest adult film stars in the world. Tony Armstrong is our most recent guest. Clancy Overall, the editor of the Batuta Advocate, stopped by in character.
Can I just say Clancy's picks, bangers. I was like, bangers. Whoa, Clancy. Really excellent.
Bangers. And a tough one for me to come up with a stuff pick, but I think I absolutely nailed it.
You
that has been most fun.
You
I'd
did a
say.
Good job. Clancy was obviously going to be a good one, but I was so surprised with his picks. Really a banger of an episode and a great show. You guys should check it out. I think Lex does some of his funniest work when talking to adult film star Angela White, and he says a line that made me like actually scare someone on my train ride on my commute when she was talking about some of her work, and Lex says, "I always say that," and it nearly made me die and fold over on the train. So he's doing great work over there. If you're not listening to him, obviously doing his great work here. So yeah, well done, man. It's awesome. I'm really looking forward to your new guests coming up.
Thanks, Brother Blake. Hopefully we got some big ones. We got a few big ones in the can, and hopefully that means some more in the future. But you've been doing awesome stuff at One Heat Minute Productions, including a beautiful series about one of my favorite movies, Midnight Run Through.
Yeah, Midnight Run Through has just ended. Jen Johans and I, a foundation movie for our friendship. We've done 12 episodes on the series, culminating with the final episode with George Gallo, who wrote it, and such a sweet man and such a sweet interview to end it. And we just had such a delightful time doing it. We had amazing guests, Charles Hood and Adam Pally before that, you know, Bed David Gabinski, you know, you name it. There's been just a lineup of really terrific people. And I was so, so proud of the series. It was such a joy to do with Jen. And yeah, we had such a great time. So that's culminated now. We're over there. I'm now transitioning toward the next series, which is Too Many Minutes, a mini series on sneakers, building up a suite of guests there and bringing you guys that, and planning for all things in the new year. But yeah, some banger episodes coming up, special bonus decade projects popping out. We've got, you know, Miami Nice coming back with John Ortiz, a gargantuan, you know, over an hour with him, and a promise for more. So really sensational time there. We've got so much more coming up with that, but yeah, having a great time and looking forward to more eps with you, my friend, and more eps in the next upcoming series. So yeah, exciting times, guys. Thank you so much for listening to the Imprint Companion. Thanks for following us along. If you want to get in touch with Lex and I, I'm One Blake Minute on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find me on Letterboxd as well. Lex is at This Is Alexi on both Instagram and Twitter, and obviously if you just search The Last Video Store, you can find Lex. And if you've already subscribed to his podcast feed, I think it's changed over, so you can just keep following him there. And obviously you're either listening to this on the Imprint Companion feed or on One Heat Mid Productions. Follow them both. You'll see the episodes pop up and some other physical media stuff from Lex and I. But we'll catch you on the next episode of Imprint Companion very, very soon.
Until then, I love you.
I love you.